How's everybody doing? Yeah? Good. Okay, I'm not going to do what Josh did last week. I almost did it. Oh, man. Who was here last week when Josh did that? Okay, I hope that ends up on YouTube. It's got to. And Jeff, are you back there? It's got to end up on YouTube. It is good to be here. I don't know if you've been here for the last 3 weeks, but I thought Matt and Josh did a great job teaching through stuff. So. Last week I left so, in the good way, convicted about what I need to do with my life. I just thought Josh, just the way he took everything Matt had taught on, and he just hit the nail on the head in regards to what is our responsibility. So just a couple of kind of just family things before I get going. The first one is... Jim went off and decided to make a lot of money. His business is doing well, so I can't get him back here to lead worship. Jerk. just by the grace of God, we ran into another guy. We've been kind of looking around for another worship guy. And we found a guy named Jared Dragoon who will be coming in here just a little bit. He was here probably about a month or two ago. I don't even remember when he was here. We brought him in, got to know his wife, Mary Beth. And so we are absolutely excited that... towards the end of this coming month, he's going to be coming on staff to do a lot of our worship. We just feel, you know, we need to get a guy back in here to lead. So when they get in, we'll make sure we introduce them to you guys, but we're really excited about that. With that being said, we're about ready to send another staff member to off to do ministry in a different place. So if I could have Todd and Taden, and I don't know which of the boys are coming up, maybe all of them, two of them, three of them, two of them, okay. What's that? Okay. Oh, I didn't see him on the inside there. Sorry, dude. I don't know if you guys know Todd and Taden, but they've... How long have you been at Cornerstone?
6 years on staff, 9 years.
Yeah, okay. Sure. I knew it'd been a while, but Todd's been doing a lot of our admin work for the last few years, and actually when I kind of came on and started my role as executive pastor, he started his role kind of almost... simultaneously as administrative pastor. So it's been fun. We've kind of been able to grow together inside of the ministry. And probably about 2 months ago is when you came to me and talked with me. Can I talk about Ron?
Sure.
Okay, it's common knowledge out there. Okay, Ron Wilson, who used to be on staff here, he decided he was done being paid to do ministry. He said, I've had enough. No, he really does feel it's time for him to retire away from that. So he stepped away from staff. And so Gordy had approached Todd, and they'd been talking about being on staff together for, gosh, a long time. Todd used to be in his ministry over at the Calvary Community Church, and so they just kind of started talking. Both elders kind of started praying, both the elders there, the elders at Cornerstone, and both of us decided it would be a really good thing to send Todd out to Cornerstone Moore Park. And so I wanted to make sure they came up on staff. I think Todd has just been a model of consistency at Cornerstone. You guys don't see him, but you see what he does every single week. Trust me, all of the hard work behind the scenes that Todd does, and then all the work he does out in Thousand Oaks. And so do you want to say anything at all before you go? Here. Oh, this is weird. I'm not going to do that. Why'd you even let me think about doing it?
Like Todd said, we've worked really closely together. A little too close sometimes, but... and I just want to say, I have so many mixed emotions standing up here today and saying that we're leaving. When I walked into Cornerstone 9 years ago, Caleb was 6 months old. My wife and I came in, we sat in that cry room back there, and were amazed at the high view of God that was portrayed from this place. And I think I had gotten away from that in my own life. And then on the flip side of that, the high view of God, but the amazing love that he has for us and the salvation that he offers to us. And it's just been such a fun process over the last several years for us to grow in that and just to see how the gospel transforms every area of your lives. And I'm excited for what Cornerstone CME has ahead of them. I'm excited for what Cornerstone Moore Park has ahead of them. I'm sad to be leaving, but I'm excited to be going in a way. But I just want to say to all of you, thanks for the partnership in ministry. It's been a fun thing for our family. We've grown a lot, and we're so thankful for this church body and the things that God does through you. So I just want to say thanks as we go.
So just, could you join me in praying? We're going to pray for them as they go, just as we send them out to Moore Park. So, God, thank you so much for Todd. Gosh, thanks for his heart, Father, just the way every day he came in so prepared to serve you, to honor you with his life, the way he treated everything in that kind of way. I thank you so much for that. Thank you for Taden, God. Thank you for just her sweet spirit. Thank you for her faithfulness to be in women's lives. And God, thank you so much for allowing them to be a cornerstone, the role that they played. And Father, now I can't wait as we send them out to Moore Park for what you have in store for them. I pray that he would be able to go out and do there what he has done so well here. And that, Father, then therefore the church out there would just become a massive magnet of reaching people with the greatest message ever, the gospel of Jesus Christ. We pray for that. We love you, Father, in your precious name we pray. Amen. Thanks, man. Yeah. All right. If you get a chance on your way out today to say goodbye to Todd, I really would. I know, I think sometimes we forget how much happens behind the scenes of especially a church of this size. He was the guy that always kept, I think, Francis and I making most of our dumb mistakes, and so he was great in that way. Today's our last day of Titus. We've been in the book of Titus now for the summer, and it was our heart to hopefully convey to you what it is that is the mission that we've been called to using the book of Titus. And I'll tell you what, I thought the last 3 weeks, just hearing Matt preach and Josh for 2 weeks, I mean, I left last Sunday after hearing Josh preach, and I was so convicted. I was so just challenged in understanding just the privilege, number one, like to think about it, the privilege that we have been indwelt by God himself. God didn't just leave us here on this planet and hope we did well and just forgive our sins, but literally when he chose to forgive us, when he talked about that idea of being washed by regeneration of the Spirit, but then literally the Holy Spirit comes inside of us and empowers us to be able to accomplish these good works that he's called us to. I mean, I just left totally excited about what that might entail. I thought Matt just nailed it when it came to grace, that we can't be motivated out of anything other than grace. God motivated us out of grace. He didn't come first in any other way other than to bring his grace, for by grace you've been saved through faith. Just that reality of it, and the way that Matt talked about that, it trains us. And so we've been in this book, and our whole heart has been, and our heart for everyone in here, is that you would understand, like what he talks about in Titus 1:1-4, I believe every last person in here was created by God specifically for purposes that we sometimes don't even have a clue about. But he designed us specifically for it and then empowered us. And then we get to do these good works the Bible talks about in Ephesians 2:10 that he prepared beforehand that we would walk in him. In other words, we get to be a part of what God's doing. That is a privilege that we have. And to sit down and to look out at this group of people and to realize all of us get to partner together. This is our team. This is a team of people with all these gifts and talents and abilities that God has pulled together, and he's placed us in this little dot in the map called Simi Valley, California. I mean, think about it. The only thing that draws us together has to be Jesus, because you know God would, there's no other way this group would have been called together. It had to have been God. He pulled us together, and he's given us a task, and the thing we've hoped we've conveyed is just the heart for Simi Valley, the heart for Southern California, where we are. But I think the thing that I love that Paul does here at the very end is he wants to make sure that we understand that while it's great that God is doing stuff in Simi Valley, God is not just a local God. God is a God that is doing stuff all around the world. He's doing stuff in Asia, he's doing stuff in Australia, he's doing stuff in Africa, he's doing stuff in Europe. In other words, God is this God that is seeking to bring order, not just the order that we've been talking about to Simi Valley, but God is seeking to bring this gospel message that brings a right relationship between us and God to the world. And if you look at it in Titus 3, open up with me real quick to Titus 3 and look at verse 12 when he starts off. He says this, "When I send Artemis or Tychicus to you, do your best to come to me at Nicopolis, for I have decided to spend the winter there. Do your best to speed Zenas, the lawyer, and Apollos on their way. See that they lack nothing. And let our people learn to devote themselves to good works so as to help cases of urgent need and not be unfruitful. All who are with me send greetings to you. Greet those who love us in the faith. Grace be with you all. There's this little thing at the very end after focusing on Titus and saying, Titus, you gotta reach Crete. Titus, I'm leaving you there. You gotta understand that it is your role, it is your task to go town to town to town, and I want you to grab these godly people, these godly men, and these godly women, and I want you to pull them together, and in pulling them together, then I want you to then teach them and instruct them, because you guys have a task to do, which is to bring to this island of Crete the greatest message ever, the gospel of Jesus Christ. Titus, you can't miss it. But then what he does at the very end of the letter, though, he wants to make sure that all of us understand, but there's other godly people around the world seeking to bring this message to bear on the world. We can't miss them. We can't miss that there's a Zenas, a lawyer. Probably what he was is when we speak about a lawyer, he probably was a guy that was trained up in the Old Testament. He was a guy that knew the Old Testament scriptures, that had just ingrained his life into him. And now this guy that used to probably be Jewish and accepted Jesus, now was a messianic Jew, that he had embraced Jesus for the first time. He was now traveling around and making sure that all these people, specifically probably messianic Jews, were hearing the greatest news ever of Jesus Christ. Apollos, he was the preacher of all preachers. In fact, when it talks about Apollos, it talks about him being this guy that when he would get up to preach, people would just, they would love to hear the message of Jesus Christ. But he says to him specifically at the very end of 13, look how he says it. He says, see that they lack nothing. What he's trying to convey is, and he wants to make sure that happens, is that if a group is not careful, they can get so focused on themselves that they implode on themselves. We get so like this, we get so ingrained thinking God is only doing a work in Simi Valley, California, that we forget that God is a God that's doing things all over this planet. And what he wants to make sure that happens is that these guys, they're going to have need. They need you to come alongside of them, he tells him. In fact, Paul says, I even need you to come to me. I'm about ready to winter in a certain place, and probably where he's going to winter, he's just about ready to go into prison, but he calls Titus, and he's like, I need you to come to me. I'll send these other guys. I'll send Tychicus. We know about Tychicus being this godly man that Paul writes about in other letters, but I will send them to you, but you come to me because I need you, but there's also Apollos and Zenas. You got to help him along, and here's how he says, I want you to help him. Look down in verse 13 what he says, or verse 14. Let your people learn to devote themselves to good works. Now, here's what he's doing. September 17th, one of the most frightening things is probably going to happen inside of the United States. Francis Chan and I are going hunting together. Bow hunting. Now, imagine he and I traipsing through the woods with a bow and arrow. Scary thought. And so I called my brother-in-law up and I said, hey, he's like this archer hunter guy, you know, that just, anyway. I go, I need help because if I get up there and I don't know what I'm doing, I want Francis to look like the moron, not me. And so I go out to visit my brother-in-law in Redlands yesterday, and the neatest thing happened is that I learned how to shoot a bow. I'm from Wyoming. I know I should just naturally come out of the womb doing this, but I don't. And so I'm shooting this bow yesterday, and so they, you know, they pull it out, and they give me all the gear. Like, I got this neat little quiver that I could hang on my pocket, and I had this bow in my hand, and then I got this little trigger thingy, bobber, and so he's like, okay, now we're going to learn, right? So I knock the arrow, and I put it on, and you know, pull it back, and so I'm like, and I pull it back, and I get it back, and all of a sudden, there's this thought, well, now what do I do? And as I'm pulling it back, I didn't know this, but my finger hits the trigger, right? And there's probably about like 8 or 9 different people in this archery range. And the arrow just goes, phew! And you could just see everybody going, oh no, who is this guy? I'm out of here, right? So my brother-in-law was so great, though. He goes, he looks at me, he goes, and I don't know if he was lying to me, but he goes, you know what? Probably all of us have done that when we first start. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. So I get up there, but the amazing thing happened. This guy just stayed with me and stayed with me and stayed with me, and he just slowly taught me how in the world it is that you shoot this arrow down into this target, and we just kept shooting and shooting and shooting and shooting and shooting. Now this word, what he's talking about here, this word learn, let our people learn. This idea is not learn like you guys are doing right now. This type of learning is just hearing the information and just putting it into my head. That's one type of learning. The other type of learning is the type of learning that you actually get your hands on something and you do something with it. Now imagine this. Imagine that I told you I could fix your car. Now first of all, you look at me and go, okay, maybe. But then imagine I walk out with a Chilton's going, come on, I'll work on your car. Now, Chilton's what it is, if you don't know that, or a Haynes. It's just a little book that kind of teaches you how your car is made up. You would look at me and go, no way. Because you know this, there's one type of thing. I could read that book over and over and over, but there's something else about actually popping the hood, getting your hands inside of that, and working on this particular car. It's a completely different thing. What he's talking about here is with Titus, he said, I don't want you to let them just be head learners. Titus, this word, I want you to make sure that our people understand that they must be learners. They must be hands-on learners in this process. And in fact, the way he says it, he uses that very next word. He says, I want them to learn. And he uses this word that's in the ESV, to devote themselves. That word is to practice and to practice and to practice and to practice. See, what my brother-in-law did with me shooting the bow was, is the first time I shot, man, arrows were just flying all over the place. And have you ever seen somebody that's just come to know Jesus? Arrows are flying all over the place. I mean, they're so excited to know Jesus, and they're excited to know who he is, but it is just like, people are stepping back going, watch out, here comes the new believer. They are just fired up, but it's like, and they come in, but there's such a unique passion about them. But then there's also these godly men that come alongside of these new believers and they just slowly hone in their skills. In other words, they teach them more and more and more about Jesus Christ. See, what my brother-in-law focused on with me with the bow and arrow, he focused on basics. See, what he's talking about here is with Timothy is I want you to focus on the basics and make sure that the people get the basics. That's what this learning is. At the very core of who we are to be a group of people that love God and we love people. And then the rest of the Bible is all about how that takes place. And what I want you to do, Titus, is I want you to stay with them and keep them devoted to it and devoted to it and devoted to it. And then he throws in this last word in there. He says, devote themselves to good works. Now we've been talking about good works. Go back up to verse 8 in chapter 3. Josh kind of talked about this a little bit. He said, the saying is trustworthy, and I want you to insist on these things that those who have believed in God, and look at this word, may be careful to devote themselves to good works. That same word, that same devote and good works is the same one he's used above. Meaning this. What I want you to do is I want you to make sure that you're in the lives of the people showing them how to do these things. It's hands-on, Titus. See, the reason that I want you to create elders way back in Titus 1, 5 through 9 is you need to be able to get these men out there in the lives of people showing them how to do this. This isn't a book knowledge thing. This isn't something that I can sit here and just hope that I learn. I've actually got to get into it, and you've got to show them how this works. Last night, we had a great night in my neighborhood. We had an ice cream social, and it was about 60 degrees last night. Little kids are out with ice cream like, I don't want any more. I mean, it was so cold. People are like bundled up. There's like blankets on for an ice cream social. But we're all standing around there. And I just sat back and I watched. See, it was just like 3 or 4 streets in my side of my neighborhood. But I watched as the believers from Cornerstone came into this ice cream social. They walked in as a group that wanted desperately to learn who this neighborhood was and who these people were. And as we started to get to meet all of our neighbors that came to this ice cream social, we started to learn there's various things like a dad who can't seem to get his kids out of his house. There's a mom that's scared to death that Simi Valley isn't the same town that she grew up in. There's another guy that just found out that his wife is dying. There's another guy that's there that just found out that he's probably losing his job. There's all these various people, and as we started to hear it, these are the things that have to be set straight where I live. And I watched the believers around me, and I learned from them. I watched as Kenny Cochran was over there scooping ice cream, talking to people, and I watched on this other side as I see a Mike Land over just sitting there listening to a guy and absorbing in who he was, but then talking to him, and I heard him say words to this guy, knowing that what Mike was doing, Mike wanted so badly for this guy's life to be set in order with the greatest message ever of Jesus Christ. It's hands-on learning. And we just watched one another. We were together with one another. And then you're sitting around, and even though it was cold, I mean, after a while, you just tell the kids to go play, and they warm up, you know. But it was just, and there was candles out there, and just people out there listening to one another with the hopes of bringing to bear on my little three streets the greatest message ever. Now, the reason that he wants to do that, he says, is because so you can help the cases of greatest need or real need. See, sometimes what we do is we come busting into a group and we're just like, Jesus saves. And they're like, yeah, but my life has fallen apart. And in other words, we don't have a way in which we come into them to help them understand what is their true need. The lady who's about ready to, that's freaking out about her kid's school, she needs to understand Jesus from the standpoint that Jesus is in charge. The guy who might lose his spouse, man, what he needs to know is she needs to know Jesus. The guy that's about ready to lose his job needs to understand there's a God in control. And we need to come in with this message of being right with God, because being right with God now, all of us that are now right with God, we understand that God causes all things to work together for good for those who love him, who are called according to his purpose. Now what he's talking about in this is he said, I want them to do this because they need to actually learn what the real needs are that people have. See, when I'm shooting archery, the first point, I'm shooting all over the place. But pretty soon, the more I shoot archery, the more and more that begins to get honed in. And I actually started to shoot what are called, and I don't even understand what it means, but groupings, meaning all my arrows are in the same spot. And they're like, oh, good job, you know, and I'm like, okay. But it's just these things start getting pulled together. See, what he's talking about is the more and more that I learn, I start to hone in on what's really needed. See, when I first came to know Jesus, I didn't care. I was just out going crazy. And in fact, I was finding people. We had in the town that I grew up in a leprechaun, of all things. He was a guy that honestly believed that's what he was. And I was convinced that leprechaun was going to know Jesus, not his pot of gold. And so we would talk with him, and we would buy him food, and we would do all kinds of things. But after a while, I started to learn, and we started to hone in. I started to understand what this leprechaun really needed. Help. No, he his issue wasn't being a leprechaun. His issue was other things. And I know that sounds weird, but I started to learn what it meant to talk to a guy like that. You hone in. You understand. And then he goes on and says this, so that you're, and not be unfruitful. In other words, so that your life wouldn't be unfruitful. See, I'd venture to say in this room today, there's a bunch of people doing a bunch of things. And we've talked about it before. The one word I hear over and over and over and over again is, I'm busy and I'm tired. Now, some of that stuff has come from mistakes we've made in the past that we're now kind of paying the price for and in different ways, but some of it is just we need to get our hands out and get dirty in ministry so that we quit focusing our energy all over the place and all these various things, and we just start honing it in on what matters, the stuff that really matters. And the whole idea is, and the way he's putting it together, in fact, if you look at that word and in verse 14, he's connecting it back up to 12 and 13, meaning the more and more you make the gospel work correctly in your life, the more and more you know how to help those that are going all over the place, what's going on in various places around the world. In other words, the more I learn the mission here, and the more I engage in the mission here, and the more I get hands-on with the mission here, the mission just being bringing the greatest message ever of Jesus Christ to this world, I start to now understand on this other side of the planet what they need to be able to accomplish their mission. I start to gain a heart not only for the people in my neighborhood, but I start to gain a heart for the people on the other side of the planet, and I start to be able to meet their needs. Now, here's what we've been trying to do at Cornerstone. Let me just see if I can lay it out for you. Since January, Jose Luis, who I'm going to bring up here in just a second, has been working alongside of a group of people to make sure at Cornerstone we don't self-implode on ourselves. We've been working hard asking you to please go out and engage in your neighborhood and engage with people that are around you and being purposeful with the gospel and getting to know your neighbors. And so we've been working hard on that. All the while, though, I remember talking with Jose Luis, and I said, my greatest concern is we get focused so much on Simi Valley that we forget what God's doing around the world. And he grabbed a group of men, and I'll let him explain that just a little bit later, and their whole goal has been, how do we make sure that we meet the needs around the world? And they are huge. But the thing about it is, we've got to meet the real needs. See, oftentimes we get caught up in social justice, we get caught up in helping the starving, which is a phenomenal thing, but in some ways, because it's devoid of the greatest message ever, the gospel, all we're doing is giving a pillow to people on their way to hell. We need these groups of men to pray and to get down on their knees and to ask God, God, what do you want us to do? Because we don't want to just make people comfortable here. Our goal in this life is not to be comfortable. Our goal in this life is to be holy and acceptable. And this one now who is right with God, that's our goal in life. Now, there is a James 2 reality where, look, if my brother's hungry and I don't feed him, there's a component to that. We've got to make sure that we meet those needs. But we can't meet the biggest need. The greatest need everyone has is an understanding of who Jesus is. We can't miss that. That's the greatest need you have. That's the greatest need your wife has. That's the greatest need your kids have. And let me tell you something, that's the greatest need that they have on the other side of the planet. It doesn't change.